Before we jump into today's episode, I want to tell you about our brand new Empower Her Sound workshop series, which will kick off in September and go through to November 2023. Each three-hour workshop will focus on a particular topic, including production in September, mixing in October, and music business in November. These workshops have been designed for anyone who is interested in learning to produce, mix, and monetize their music, and you don't have to have any previous knowledge to attend. So if you're very much a beginner, we would love to see you here. For our podcast listeners, we have created a very special discount, which makes each three-hour workshop only $5. To get this discount, all you have to do is go to the link in the show notes, select the group ticket, and use the discount code EMPWR50. Thanks, and I look forward to seeing you in the workshops.
What am I saying?
This is MPW, the podcast with your host,
Zylo Aria.
Cool.
A podcast about music production
for the everyday musician,
where we learn from experienced studio engineers and each other.
Laura Semple has over 10 years of experience in the social media and digital marketing landscape. Outside of running Hunger Digital, a Melbourne-based music agency specializing in PR, marketing, and bookings, Laura also lectures at Collarts, manages local Melbourne artists, and makes up one-fourth of the event collective Femme Fantasy, which create inclusive events focused towards the queer community. So welcome, Laura. It's so lovely to have you on our podcast. And how's your day been so far?
It's been pretty good. And it's funny you say so far, because I've been working on So Far Sounds things today. So I can never hear that word again.
Oh, funny. Okay. No, very good. So today we are going to be chatting to you about creating your artist brand. But before we get into that, I would love to learn a little bit more about you. So how did your career get started in music, and how did you get to where you are today, if you want to give me a little summary of that journey?
Yeah, I think honestly, my journey probably started when I was 4 years old. I loved music so much. And I asked my mum if I could learn piano. And the piano teacher said, no, I was too young. So I started with singing and then learned piano. And so classically trained, picked up various instruments, and just it followed me throughout my whole childhood and teenager. And then when I went to uni, I went to School of Audio Engineering for a little short stint. But that's probably towards the end of finishing my degree, which was not in music. Outside of School of Audio Engineering, I did a different degree. I started a blog called Semple Size, and it just really started as I had a passion for writing. I was obsessed with music, and I just wanted an outlet to be able to put it all. And so I started this blog when I was living on the Gold Coast. And when I moved to Melbourne to, get more into the creative scene, I ended up expanding the blog, and I got some other contributors to join on. And I had a fashion editor at a time. We had, I think, 30 contributors Australia-wide and a couple around the globe. And it just became this thing that it was, I guess, in the era of when blogs were really a thing and very independent. And then the blog created all of these opportunities where I could try a lot of things that I now do for a job, such as booking, publicity, running ads and stuff like that. So it was kind of this hub where, people who wanted to get their foot in the door in the music industry could kind of start and hone their own skills. And the first Semple Size gig I put on, we had Banoffee headline. I think we had about 12 artists, a runway show with 3 fashion designers at Howla, which was amazing. And
oh my goodness.
I know. My claim to fame is that Semple Size also got to put, so when we had another gig, we were the first headline show for Confidence Man, which was pretty cool that they ever had. Now they're massive. From doing these shows, it connected me with an amazing person, Zach Abrams, who, very kindly helped us pro bono with PR. He just really believed in the publication and what we were doing, and he did our PR for us. And from there, I kind of just kept I guess you could say hassling or harassing maybe, but asking him for an internship because I just really wanted to get into doing PR in the music world, like I'd been doing in like consumer brands, so everyday household kind of products and things like that. And I just really wanted to get my foot in the door in the music industry. So he gave me a internship and then I ended up quitting my day job because I really hated it and decided I'm not coming back. I went home back to Queensland and said, I'm not coming back until I get a job, like a job in music in Melbourne. And Zach called me literally the day that I left Melbourne and offered me a job. And I guess the rest was really history. That really started it all. I was lucky enough to be freelancing at a very young age and working for, you know, brands or like companies like Handsome Tours and Wondercore Island and, you know, all these amazing brands and businesses. And I think the one thing that I kind of had that other publicists and people didn't at the time was I also came from a social media background. So I like did my thesis on social media and I was able to look at how, you know, social media advertising mixed in with PR can create like a holistic approach. And that's sort of what I've now honed into what I do with Hunger Digital, which we're a music agency. We were just a PR agency when I started, but we've sort of branched out and do management and bookings as well. But it's really about the holistic approach to an artist and how, you know, there's so many things out there, how each puzzle piece comes together. So that was my very short, long story.
Oh, no, I love that. And I'm pretty sure I've emailed you back in the day under Sample Size to try and get a little feature or something. I'm sure that's happened. And also, it's so cool that when you take that leap is when those opportunities come. Like you mentioned, you're like, I'm going to, you know, find a job in music and that's going to be the only way I come back. And it was only until you left and took that leap that you get that call up. And so often I feel like we can try and like straddle two things and like be in two minds, but I feel like maybe the universe or whatever just doesn't bring those opportunities our way until we really commit to trying something new.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think I look back to my days when I had the blog and had Sample Size and like how, I guess, fearless I was in my decision making, like, you know, to make a blog and think that people will actually read it and like get contributors and stuff like that. And I think, you know, I'm trying to remind myself now that I'm a little bit older to try and keep that fearlessness in a way. It's a bit scarier, you know, more commitments or whatever. But like when you have the space to make those leaps, incredible things can come.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And yeah, keeping that fearlessness is a great, great thing to mention there as well. And just to mention for anyone who's not from Melbourne, the lovely gig space that is Howler is a pretty big venue to just kind of take over and do your own thing as well, which is really cool.
Yeah, it was amazing. I learned a lot. Like I started off not even knowing what backline was around, like, you know, a couple of months before this sort of show happened to fully hiring a proper backline company. And like, yeah, it just was a great learning curve and stepping stone into setting me up.
For sure, for sure. Oh, and I definitely feel like having your own thing, whether it's a business or some sort of venture, is like the quickest way to learn loads of things that you never knew existed.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So coming to a bit of time travel then, Laura, can you tell me what is one event in your life that if you could, you would change?
Honestly, I don't think that there would be any event that I wish that I could change just because, you know, you learn so much from things. I think there's times where I wish I maybe either spoke up more or felt more confident. I think like one of those things, which is a really great example, is like Big Sound, for example. So it's like an amazing music conference where everyone in the music industry around Australia is at. But I find myself being a bit of a fake extrovert is what I like to say. And I'm not very good with like people that I don't know or, you know, trying to talk, and networking is actually weirdly enough not my strong suit. So I've been practicing more about how to just have, I guess, inner confidence and be okay to go up to people that I may not know, but I've heard of, and just like either introduce myself or start a conversation. And it's actually not as scary, and people are really nice, especially in the music industry. So I think it's not necessarily like changing a particular event, but, you know, just trying to find confidence in some of those other things.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's nice that you mentioned that as well, because I am very much an introvert as well. And I never really put myself out there when I was living in Australia until I moved to the UK, and I realized no one is going to know me until I put myself in front of them. And I remember the first few networking events I went to, I would just come home shattered because I was just kind of putting myself in, out of my comfort zone, and just would take so much out of me. But I would just set little goals for myself of like, I'm just going to go here just for half an hour and talk to two people that I don't know. And then it got a little bit easier every time. And now I feel like it feels a lot more natural, but it's still not the thing that comes to me automatically, I think. So it's a good thing to mention that a lot of us go through that, and it's just a matter of maybe building it in ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. I think like if we think about the music industry, it's kind of like a tech-based type. You know, it's quite an intellectual thing, like making music and stuff like that. And a lot of people are quite introverted. I think like it's why people make music, is so they can like be by themselves. Even though you go on stage, it's like a different person on stage. But in reality, so many musicians are quite shy, or they have, you know, social anxiety or just anxiety in general. And it's funny that you say like you set yourself goals and things, because I honestly like worked with my therapist on how I could get over this like social anxiety side of things. And she was like, yeah, set yourself the goal of just go talk to one person, but not only, or one or two people, but not only talk to them, make sure you actually either write it down or just clock the memory of it wasn't that bad. Like you had, like if you had a good experience, making sure that you remind yourself, oh, I had a good experience. So then the next time you go out, you can be like, oh, remember that good experience. Like it's okay to talk to your peers and industry.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So can you then tell me a random fact about yourself that maybe not that many people in the industry know about you?
Yeah, I think I had two random facts-ish, but one random fact is probably that I'm from a tiny country town of only 5,000 people. The street that I grew up on was my last name. So like I grew up, well, it was a road, Semple's Road.
Oh my gosh.
It was a tiny country town. Yeah. And where a lot of people just automatically assume that I've always lived in Melbourne, or I'm a city person and stuff. So I grew up on a farm, and so I kind of remind myself that's kind of where I came from, and to be living in Melbourne in a very creative industry is quite exciting. So that's probably my number one. Not many people know.
Yeah, I love that. So was that your family street or random coincidence?
Kind of. So my granddad, he gave off some land so that they could build the road. So a lot of the roads and stuff in the area are named, I guess, after the farmers who gave their land to, or like, yeah, some to build a road, I suppose.
Okay. That's a very cool random fact. I like that.
Yeah.
So coming to our topic today, Laura, on creating your artist brand. So starting with, when we're talking about an artist brand, can you please define for me what exactly are we talking about and what aspects make up that brand?
Talking about artist branding, and like just for context, like I had been teaching at both CollArts and RMIT in social media and digital marketing, and, you know, really honing in for the students and stuff like that about their own branding for their artist projects. And one thing that I know with working with a lot of artists is that they hate the term branding and they hate the term marketing, which is interesting. But in reality, you are, you know, selling your music, which is kind of like a product. So an artist brand is really everything about them. So it's, you know, their social media presence, the way that you write your social media copy, you know, the image you portray on stage. And I think it's really important to note that the more recognition that you start to get, the more people start to recognize that image. So it's just sort of, you know, in a way, trying to control the image that you want out there and be perceived. But also the really great thing with music and music artists is that you can be very adaptable and it's okay for your branding and your image and all of that to change. So unlike a consumer brand, if we want to think of, I don't know if you know Swisspers, it's very random, but it's the cotton buds and things like that. Their branding's not really going to change. It's always going to be the same color. It's always going to have the same tone of voice. Where an artist, you know, you grow, you change, you're into different things, and that's okay for your branding to have that flow as well.
Mm. That's a really good thing to mention there as well. And I feel like a few of our students that we speak to feel a bit unsure about setting their brand because then they feel like they're set in stone and they can't change it. So it's good to know that, you know, things can change and evolve and that's fine.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like the way that I see it, especially for music artists, it is a very different world, like music to every other kind of brand. Like as a music artist, you still have to be a real person. So I don't really like to say influences, but in a way, just for the context of it, you're kind of balancing the line between a brand, an actual like product brand, and an influencer in a way. Like we can draw in some similarities between that, but you can be really malleable, I guess. And then with it, like I see it for music artists as just like a central point to go back to. So if you're ever feeling a little bit lost about like what kind of content should I be posting or what is my direction, if you've written it down, you can kind of go back to your little branding doc. And it might just be a nice little reminder or a sounding board to help you along the way.
And how important do you feel it is to have a strong brand, even if it is one that's changing as an artist? And how do you think that that would shape your career?
I think it's like imperative, honestly. I think not just, you know, just so that visually you have an idea of how to market yourself, but it will make everything so much easier. So a lot of the time when I'm working with an artist, we'll go through a brand identity process, which just is like a number of questions. So it might be along the lines of how old are you? How do you identify? And stuff like that. And for context, I work with an artist or artist project called Plastic. So they're a duo. One of them's based in Adelaide. The other is based here in Melbourne. And they said that their age is, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's probably thousands of years old. And that they identify as non-binary, but that they're like organisms, you know, living and changing as time goes by. So for them, it's not like based in the reality that we know and see, but it's, you know, creating this really visual concept. And then on the other hand, you know, I've worked with an artist, he's a dad, he, you know, has quite an awkward personality. And it's just honing in on those characteristics that make him as an artist. So a lot of the time, an artist's personality is really an extension, it's an accentuated version of themselves. So it's sort of, yeah, trying to tap into that. And then that really helps flow onto everything. So again, what is the style of content that you want to be sharing on social media? And that, you know, knowing your beliefs and your identity of who you are as an artist will help you know what you want to post about. It will also help, you know, a graphic designer understand who you are. It will help a publicist have, you know, a creative bio or something like that to give more information. But not only that, if you start working with like an artist manager, they just really know who you are. And the more that I've been talking with labels and things like that for artists is that, you know, they seem to gravitate towards artists who do have a fairly strong idea with who they are and also just knowing how they want to be represented. It really helps.
Okay. So if you are an artist that's very clear on that, that's probably great for that and to be able to build a brand around it. But say there are some artists that are quite unsure what their brand is. They don't really feel like they have a strong idea of what
they want things to look like. For example, with this dad that you mentioned, and he felt like he was a little bit awkward. So what would you say to these people on how to tap into what makes them unique or those special traits that you mentioned? And are there any exercises that they can do?
Yeah, I think the best way to, or the best place to start, is to think about your stage presence. So when you're on stage, how do you feel on stage? Like, are you really confident? Is your banter quite awkward? What do you wear on stage? A lot of the time, even if it's quite casual, your outfits, like, you'll have a thought out plan of what you want to wear on stage. And that's sort of where your identity starts. So really what it is like thinking about that stage presence, and then how do you represent that across everything else? So how does that get represented on your socials? And say, for example, part of your identity on stage or your stage presence is that your banter is quite awkward, or, you know, might be minimalist and you don't say anything. So it's sort of bringing that back into also your social media tone of voice, or, you know, the way that you interact with people. And I think I'll put a little disclaimer here. I know a lot of artists don't like social media, and, you know, you're being really pushed to be on social media and you do have to do everything. But my biggest probably advice is you always have to stay true to yourself. So again, unlike a consumer brand, it's really important to be authentic. And if TikTok is not your thing, you know, stay across what is happening on there, but don't feel like you have to just pump out TikToks. Make it feel more natural to you and just take it step by step. But the exercises that you can do, so I do a questionnaire, and it will be starting off with, yeah, your age, how do you identify? So when you're doing this, you have to put yourself in your character. So think of your stage presence character. And it might be, another question I have is, who would be your best friends if you like went out to lunch or something? And for example, your best friends, they're not literally the people that you know and your real life best friends, but it might be like a media outlet that you gravitate towards that, you know, is in line with your music. It might be a clothing label that, again, you know, you might wear those types of clothes on stage. Or for example, for my own business, Hunger Digital, I said one of ours is Article by Courtney Holm, which is a designer here. And they also do like really ethical stuff and sustainable clothing. So that's like, we fall in line with that. You might also put other musicians or bands into your best friends. So it's sort of like, if you could have your ideal table of people, whether they're real people or just like other brands and things like that, who would be at your table? And then the other questions are, what would you be wearing at work? So at work for a music artist is either on stage or in the recording studio or something like that. And then what can we find you wearing, you know, every day? So is there a difference between like your stage presence and your at-home presence? And then one of the other questions is, what can we find you doing outside of work? So outside of being on stage. So it might be, again, this doesn't have to be real for you. It might be exaggerated. So for example, you might say that you can find you at all the gigs every day of the week. You're out there listening to live music. That might not be your reality, but it's just sort of honing in on that. Or you might say that you're out in nature or taking, you know, film photography, and adding those things in, it quickly tells you what your interests are as a music artist outside of music. So a lot of these questions actually have very little to do with the music that you make, but it's creating that personality. And then from there, everything else kind of flows.
Okay. So yeah, a few things to mention or to think about there, and great questions as well to think about and to learn a little bit more about yourself. And for those people that feel like they don't have a strong brand personality that they can bring into the brand, do you think it's okay to have like a kind of girl next door vibe, or does it have to be something weird or quirky or something all the time?
No, it doesn't have to be weird or quirky at all. I think it just has to be authentic is probably the biggest thing. And like, you know, it's also kind of playing up, or again, it's probably exaggerating parts of who you are naturally. Or like, you know, I had my own music project. I had a band called Arcadia, and then I had my own solo project called Adeline, and they were very different sorts of sides to me. And so, you know, I had really dark makeup and very short pink hair. It was like, you know, very over the top, really cool fashion, but it just like allowed me to showcase a side that I may not have naturally felt like I could in my everyday life. And, you know, it's not a natural thing for artists to think marketing wise, but when you start to sort of tap into that side, you probably can see someone else's branding, even if they don't know what it is. You know, we all have these core things that make us who we are, and that is our branding. It's just being able to, I guess, clearly identify it and make it more over the top, I suppose.
Okay, so maybe it's useful to talk to someone else and get the outside perspective of what do they associate with you if it's hard to do it yourself.
Exactly. You might ask them, so like when you listen to my music, what are some other brands that might come into mind? So I find it really natural when I start chatting to an artist, I'll be like, oh, I can see you sitting at a table with like Rush or Frankie magazine, or, you know, you might, you know, I can imagine you walking on a beach, you know, you have like your music's very sun-drenched kind of vibe. So yeah.
Okay.
No, do it with a friend.
Yeah, it's really useful, and make it fun as well, so it doesn't feel so much like work. So
exactly.
In the opposite of artists who maybe don't know their brand, there are some that are quite clear on how they want to be represented visually. And for example, I was speaking to an artist at Big Sound, in fact, where he mentioned, and he's a queer artist, and he mentioned that he had a very strong vision of what he wanted his brand to look like, but he felt that he wasn't sure if it would be accepted by others and if he could be himself, because it was a little bit weird and out there. What would you say to someone like that?
Yeah, I find this a lot, especially with queer artists. So a majority of the artists that I work with are queer. I think like on our booking agency, I think it's about 65 or nearly 70% of our roster is queer or non-binary. And a lot of the artists, yeah, I think because you're so used to being told to hide who you are, it's really scary to then do the complete opposite and just fully own what you want to do. And I think for the artist that you're talking about, a really good example for them to look at is Dirty Versace, who's an artist that I manage. They are a non-binary alien, we say. So they honed into their own character of being an alien because they felt it was the best way to represent how they felt as someone who is queer and who is non-binary. And in this music world, when they were a lot younger, they were told to hide their identity if they wanted to make it in music, their queer identity, that is. And so they've just fully lent into owning this alien world of theirs, and it's actually really resonated for them personally, and it's made what they're doing so much easier. It's made it feel a lot more natural to, you know, create content and do photo shoots now around this over the top alien. And I feel the same with like my own project. Like I came from a really strict, I guess, Catholic background as a child. And then my project as Adeline, in a way, was my escape to just being fully free of who I wanted to be and not worrying about what my parents thought or anybody else. And so I think if you have a strong identity with, or like a character that might be over the top and you're not too sure if it's going to resonate well, I think as long as it resonates well with you, that's the most important thing. Because even though you might be an alien or you might be, I don't know, something quite crazy, if it feels true to you and as part of your art, then that's going to come across and that's going to feel more authentic than you trying to be the girl next door if that's not naturally how you feel when you're on stage and things like that.
Yeah, that brings up a really good point as well about authenticity, which you mentioned a bit earlier as well. And I remember when I was starting out in the music industry, I felt like I was trying to be something else to fit into a mold of an artist and create a brand that actually wasn't true to myself. And that made it really hard to post anything because I was kind of trying to put my head into someone else's mind that wasn't me at all and thinking, what would they post? So I guess that's probably not the best way to go about it, and staying authentic is a better idea.
Exactly. And I think like we all do it, even again, going back to my project of Adeline, it was quite rigid in the type of content that I would post, always being pink, even though I do love pink. But sometimes when you're too rigid, it makes it really hard and it does become to feel like work. And I think as a music artist, you have to be not only a producer, an artist, a singer, songwriter, and all of those things, but you also have to be a model and you have to be a content creator and you have to be a social media ad expert and a publicist and a manager, and like all the hats go on. So, you know, if you make creating the social media side and the marketing side really hard, it's just going to create this brick and not make it fun. But also in saying that, if you have set yourself up and it's starting to not feel authentic, when you can just like shift things a little bit and it's okay. So it's okay to move and change. You could do a post telling people why you are, or it doesn't really matter. I think at the end of the day, we're our own worst critics. And, you know, I think someone gave me this advice. They said, everybody's too busy worrying about themselves to be worried about like what you're internally worrying about. So it's okay. You know, we all change and we all adapt. So just make it easy on yourself.
Yeah, for sure. No, I totally agree. And yeah, that's something that I've been trying to remind myself a lot, especially when you're overthinking something, to realize that actually no one cares that much about you. And that's actually quite an empowering thing because, you know, and then if you're like, oh, well, if no one cares, then let's just do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like, on that note, like I went to a TikTok workshop when they were talking about sound on and all this kind of stuff, but they were sort of saying, you know, you are your own biggest advocate. If you're not going to promote your music and sell your music, nobody else is. So like, of course, people, you know, your friends and all of that will, but like you are your biggest advocate. So I think we put a lot of walls up and block ourselves in a way because we're like, oh, majority of my followers are my friends and my family, and they're not going to want to see me, you know, talking about my own music all the time. But the thing is like, block that out. Who cares? Just see it as practice and making yourself feel comfortable, because hopefully your audience is going to expand outside of your inner network. And the more you feel comfortable with it, the more, you know, when you have new people coming onto your page or things like that, the more natural it'll feel to you. So
for sure.
Just do it.
Yeah. Love it. Just do it. Good, good advice there. So once you have a brand as an artist, then how do you go about staying true to it and being consistent with your audience about that brand?
Yeah. So the best way to do that, so I create a branding, I guess, Bible in a way. So we start with our brand identity, which is answering those questions such as, you know, how old you are, all of that kind of thing. And it creates like a persona, so to speak. And then from there, what you should do in it is also write down sort of what is important to you. And, you know, from there, you add your other elements such as your colors, maybe your tone of voice and things like that. And whenever you're feeling a little bit lost, because it will feel really natural to you to like create content when, you know, when you're feeling a bit fresh, but sometimes you might just have a blockage, or, you know, you might be even writing your own media release and you're just lost for words a little bit. But this branding sort of style guide, if you could say, it acts a bit like a Bible, I suppose, and you can always look back at it and it's a good reminder of, oh yeah, this is who I am as an artist and what I stand for and what's important to me. You know, you've written it in a time where you're feeling, you know, really confident and good about what you're writing about. So whenever you're feeling a little bit lost, you can always reflect back on it.
Okay. I think you've really inspired me there, Laura, to create my own branding document, because it was actually one that we have quite strongly for music production for women. But I used to have one as well for Xylo Aria, and it was on my wall for a long time, and now it's just disappeared, mainly because I've moved a few times. But I forgot actually how useful that was in deciding what kind of content to create, but also when you have content to decide, does it fit with the brand? And you don't want to be talking about every single aspect of your life and just what aligns with the brand. So thank you. I'm going to get on that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think those things to talk about, we call them content pillars. So that's the very technical term for it. And they kind of, I guess, act as like a little bit of a house where all your ideas fall under. So content pillars, much like your branding, they can adapt, they can change. But let's just say you are releasing music, your music is coming out. You might focus your content pillars really around that release. So a content pillar could be the whatever the single's name is one of the ideas. And you might put in, you know, how you wrote the music or like little snippets of in the studio. Another content pillar might be media articles. And so it's, you know, you're talking about the media that's been writing about you and things like that. Another content pillar could be behind the scenes where you go more like either pictures or could be inspiration or whatever. And so when you're in that releasing music stage, it's very heavily about the music, but you're also breaking it up. So it's not just, I don't know, like press shot, cover up, press shot, you know, that kind of thing. You're mixing it up. And then when you're outside of releasing, that's the perfect time to really showcase your personality and your identity. And honestly, the outside of releasing your music is probably the most important. That's when you're building your audience before the release. And so your content pillars might be who is the artist, and you might talk about your journey and where you've come from. And, you know, it might be simple things as like your music journey might have started at a Steadfords and things like that. And then you might have, yeah, either previous releases or other music and, you know, just tapping into those little traits of your personality outside of just the music side.
It's now time for our speed quiz. Are you ready?
I'm nervous. I'm not very good at like, okay, I can do it. High pressure.
You can do it. You can do it. So it's five quick fire this or that question, and it's the first one that comes to your mind. So
okay.
Oceans or mountains?
Ooh, oceans.
Roller coasters or water slides?
Water slides.
Headphones or speakers?
Ooh, headphones.
Festival or rave?
Festival.
Mac or PC?
Oh, Mac for sure.
Okay. That was good. We almost lost you at the first question where you were kind of wondering oceans or mountains, but I'm probably with you there. It's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Yeah. I don't know whether I just said oceans because it was like said first. So in my mind, I had like oceans, but I really like nature and hiking. So
yeah, me too.
Yeah.
It's hard. But no, that was good. Good on the speediness scale, I think. So yeah, good job.
Thank you.
So then what is your top career tip?
So my top career tip, probably trust your gut. Like, honestly, I think we can have lots of decisions thrown at us or, you know, not be sure if we should go this way or that way or what we want or are we making the right decision? And I think sometimes just sitting with it and thinking about, okay, if I went this way, what would things look like? And then if I went this way, what would it look like? And which one makes you feel more comfortable? And it's okay to just make a decision and if it's not the right thing to change and whatnot. So yeah, trust your instinct and just really go for things because I think we probably more than not stop ourselves from accomplishing what we want to accomplish.
100%. Yeah, no, I totally agree there that we are our biggest hindrance and the quicker we realize that, the better for us.
Yeah, I think so. And I think honestly, like if anyone's wanting to get like a job in the music industry and things like that, I'm not saying that it's easy at all. It is really hard. But I came from a country town where we only had dial-up internet and a satellite on like on our house to be able to get internet, even though, yeah. And like, it just, the music industry seemed like this crazy thing. And now even when I go back home and tell people, you know, who I work with or who's in my network of like industry professionals and things like that, it seems crazy, but honestly, you just have to start. And someone said to me, yeah, that nobody has done it before. Like, you know, everybody had to start somewhere. So you might be feeling really scary to try something new or whatever it may be, but there's been someone who's been in that exact same position as well. And that we're really lucky, I think, in Australia, in a way that our music industry is quite small too. So, you know, people are really, they are really generous. If you, you know, if you want to say, for example, want to work for a label, if you reached out to someone and said, I'd love to, you know, take you out for a coffee or a beer and get to know like how you got to where you are, or, you know, just like pick your brain a little bit. More often than not, people will say yes, or they'll jump on a Zoom with you. And I think that's the one thing that I've found with our industry, especially over the years, is it's becoming a lot more nurturing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. And what is your one top self-care tip?
My self-care tip would be find that thing that I guess helps you create inner peace. So when things are turbulent or really crazy, what is something that, you know, gives back to your soul? And so for me, that's nature. And it, so it's really important that I give myself, I try to at least every day, you know, it's time to just like be off the technology and go out, go for a walk, you know, or if times are really crazy. So, you know, I always get post-gig anxiety whenever I put on a really big show or something. So now I've become in the habit of I'll go camping like the next day, or I'll like, you know, go somewhere that's away from the city and just be in nature. So find your
love that
calming thing.
Yeah. I love all of those things on the nature and the camping. So good tips there, but whatever that is for someone. So that's good. And what is your one top general life tip?
Honestly, it's probably something that I've found really hard to do, but it's just trying to find balance. I've always been someone that doesn't stop. Like I'll be working full time and interning and running a blog and studying all at once. And I think it's so important to just find moments of stillness. And that, you know, I think we've created this hustle culture is what they call it. And everyone thinks you're doing amazing when you're hustling or when you're busy. But honestly, only since starting my own business that I've really realized it's more important to really appreciate life. So that would be my life tip, would be don't let life just go by and work and, you know, hustling be your everything. Make sure you go out and hang out with your friends, take some time off, go on a holiday.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. No, it's very, very true. And otherwise, what are you doing this for, really, if it's not bringing you joy in some way? So
yeah,
really important tip there. Cool. So thank you so much, Laura. It's been so lovely and I've gotten a lot from all of your knowledge, and I'm sure our audience has too. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really fun, and yeah, keen to hear what people think. So feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions.
Sounds good. My biggest three takeaways from Laura's episode was, firstly, a great way to find your brand as an artist is to think about your stage presence and to think about how do you talk to your audience, what kind of clothes might you wear, and who might you be best friends with as an artist. This will help you determine what your true authentic brand is. My second biggest takeaway was that it's okay for your branding to change. So if you no longer feel tied to the brand that you've created for yourself, you can update that depending on what's important to you. My last takeaway was the importance of having a branding document that has all this information in one place so that you can often refer to it to help you create content. That's it from us this week. I hope you enjoyed the episode and we look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks.